Yo, and welcome back to another episode of the Fix Sports Podcast. I am Joseph Ward, joined by my homeboys, Doc Love, Sam Dixon, and Javard Grant, right here on the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Coming straight from the side, going down. Audio shop talk right in your ear hole. Man, we back. We in round three of this, trying to figure out who is the greatest college football team of the past 40 years. And this ain't easy, all right? So all y'all football analysts and all y'all breaker downers and all these people here who do this stuff, hey, man, shout out to y'all because we learning. You can't just get on this thing and start running your mouth because you're going to look stupid. So that's how it is. It's really going to everybody like, yeah, bitch, you're going to look dumb as hell. Hey, man, so episode 16. I mean, you know, I never remember the episode numbers, but we're in round three of our break of our look at who's the greatest college football team of all time. This round got good matchups. We have 2019 LSU versus 2001 Miami, as well as 2013 FSU versus 2004 USC. But this episode, we're going to take it one by one. We're going to focus on 2019 LSU versus 2001 Miami this episode. HBCU Spotlight, Morehouse has a polo team, and they're going out and getting their polo on. All-black polo team in y'all face. You know them white folk nervous. So we're going to talk about that. Weekly rant, we got two parts. One, the Tokyo Olympic president, he out here wilding, man. He out here like just running, flipping off the mouth and telling women what they can't do. And Buddy got in trouble. So he had to resign. So we're going to talk about that. And then y'all homeboy, y'all favorite football coach, Urban Meyer out here, Urban Meyer in again. He done hired a buddy from Iowa, the strength coach from Iowa that got fired for doing racist stuff to the players. Over 50 players coming out saying, buddy, we're racist. Urban Meyer hired, buddy. And so we're going to talk about it like that. Cliffhanger, talk about it like that. So start off with this HBCU spotlight that shot. We got to go down there or up there for me to Atlanta, Georgia. Javar, and yo, we round the corner from you in Morehouse. Don't you stay down the street? You stay down the street for this episode. Just say yes.
Yes.
So Morehouse is the only HBCU with a polo team and can now compete with the U.S. Polo Association. So they're going to get the shirt. So all the black people who've been wearing polo all these years, now it finally pays off. All right? There it is. So Morehouse College has always been a groundbreaker. And that legacy of shaking up the establishment continues at the school. We will now have the only polo team among historically black colleges and universities. The U.S. Polo Association, the governing body of the sport, has officially invited the Maroon Tigers Polo Club into the organization, immediately allowing Morehouse to be involved in intercollegiate, interscholastic division competitions. The idea of an HBCU or any college having a polo team may seem unusual. The sport isn't one of the several sponsored by the NCAA, and athletically, Morehouse has historically had a reputation for a strong basketball, football, and track and field teams. Lies. But Amy Frazier, director of polo for the U.S. Polo Association, says she's confident the school's alumni will embrace the new sport. Y'all better embrace this sport, man. Y'all black folk, embrace the sport, man. Support these boys. What impresses me the most about Morehouse is the strong alumni base and how the alumni, whether polo playing or not, have embraced the polo team and have stepped up in numerous ways to support the program. And that's me sounding like that lady. I'm hoping she don't really sound like that. So the dream of having a polo team at Morehouse has even more feasible local entrepreneur and team co-founder Miguel Wilson, along with four Morehouse students, Ryan Toussaint, Justin Nguyen, Jason Palmer, and experienced equestrian Caleb Cherry, whose polo coach suggested he try and bring a team to Morehouse. Wilson used his Ride to the Olympics nonprofit foundation to begin gathering funding for the team. The Ride to the Olympics, established in 2017 on its mission to make equestrian sports polo, show jumping, dressage, more accessible to youth who may not normally be exposed to the sport. Morehouse's polo team was established last year, and the boys finna go out there and get they polo on. Man, how y'all feel about that? Sam, starting with you, because you like animals and stuff. You were. Hey, Sam was the hood crocodile hunter for. We knew who the crocodile hunter was, though. We learned all our animals from Sam. So we're going to start with you.
Nah, man, but yeah, I think it's great, man. I mean, a lot of people are not even really familiar with, not even just black people, but people in general not even familiar with polo. Right. So I mean, I think it's really cool, because it's an interesting sport. I mean, the horses do a lot of the work, but you know, it's still, because it's one of those sports where it's kind of thought of, you know, it's being that it's involved as horses and requires such, you know, the field is so huge, you need this much space, several different horses or whatnot. It's an elitist type sport, maybe even more so than something like golf, which is kind of thought of as the elitist of elitist sports.
Right.
But it's a really elitist type sport, and for HBCU to be involved in it, I think it's just another barrier that needed to be broken down. So yeah. It's cool to see.
That's what's up. What about you, Grant?
I think there's an important distinction to make. The U.S. Polo Association and Ralph Lauren are two different brands. And you gotta be careful with which polo shirt you're rocking, especially in middle school and high school. But when you just think about the sports that people across the country play, most of them have to do with, you know, whatever region of the country that you're in, as well as the economics. You know, a lot of black kids grew up playing football, basketball, track, because those are typically some of the least expensive sports to play. And most schools in the South put more of their resources into football more than any other sport. And so this is just, you know, opening people's eyes to other things outside of the common sports that people play, just so that you can, there's a chance for people to have different life experiences, especially right. Once kids enter the collegial years of their maturation.
Nah, that's real.
Grant, you're a fool. But no, I think it's awesome, man. Especially now with, you know, they'll be able to expose like a lot of kids to it, because, you know, you can only really be interested in what you're exposed to. And to an extent, like Sam was saying, like a lot of these sports, you are pretty much considered elitist sports. And to see black kids in them is still sometimes a bit taboo, you know what I'm saying? So you would see, you know, the shock it took for us to see Tiger in the game. And, you know, we talk about polo now, like, that's different. And then, you know, even with, like, lacrosse and stuff like that, those aren't things you necessarily see us in. Because, like I said, I mean, the dollar amount that it takes to even be involved in these sports is just like unrealistic for a lot of us. You know what I'm saying? So, I think it's pretty cool, man. I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah, and especially with it being in the Atlanta area, so with it being one of the, or if not the largest city with the largest, or the city with the largest black population, or one of them, in America. A lot of black kids or black people, period, will be able to be exposed to polo. Man, I'm down with invading sports. We coming for your polo. We coming for your hockey. We coming for your swimming. We done came for your golf and your tennis. Coming for your table tennis. We coming for your whatever you doing. We coming for it. I'm down for it. It's I just want to make sure that when we invade these folks' sports, that we understand that it's not just about individual things, that folk always kind of reach back and help expose others to the new things. Because with us, it's just always been a lack of exposure a lot of times. So with the more exposure we get, the more we learn, the more we see, the more we grow, and the more we take over. You could say table tennis, we're coming. So,
isn't table tennis an Olympic sport?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to see that HBCU esports team so I can get on there.
Yeah. Got see that.
They're playing League of Legends and stuff.
That's the one that Black Lady started?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I came across that article the other day. All right, man, that's our HBCU spotlight. So shout out to the Morehouse Polo team. Shout out to Morehouse University, all the HBCUs anyway. And we wish y'all luck and go out there and win the polo matchups and give us some shirts.
One with one man on the horse, not two.
You got to say Ralph Lauren on the tag.
Right.
Hey. Them shirts is comfortable as hell.
Hey, all the cats used to be walking around with the U.S. Polo Associations.
They had no idea what it was for.
They just sell polo. And they was like, I'm good.
You got one too many men on that horse, bro.
Hey, man. All right, so we're in our third round of our quest. Who's the greatest college football team of the past 40 years? Is it 2004 USC? Is it 2013 FSU? Is it 2019 LSU? Or is it 2001 Miami? That's our final four. We done got all the way down our final four. And it's time to make sure that we put the metal to the pedal, or the pedal to the metal, however you say that, and make sure we figure out who it is that we're going down. So today we're going to focus on the 2019 LSU and the 2001 Miami matchup. So let's start here, because we already did our impact players last round. So we're not going to start with our impact players, because we got something new that we want to do for every round. So we don't want to do the impact players. So let's start here. And this just popped in my head. All right. When you think about these two teams, start with you, Grant. When you think about 2019 LSU, what's one of like your most fondest memories, or one of the standout memories that you have about this team, and what makes this team great?
I think one of my fondest memories is not necessarily about the team itself, but one of the results. And that is always going to be the semifinal game against Oklahoma. I went to grab some food before the game, and when I got back, it was all LSU already had 21 points.
Yeah, in that first quarter. Yeah.
And you know, as bad as Oklahoma's defense was, they still were the fourth ranked team in the country. And for an offense to overwhelm somebody like that, it's just something that I just never expected in that high profile of a game. And to just completely dismiss a team that had, you know, players that were, you know, all conference, either first or second team All-American, you had a Heisman Trophy finalist. And to be just completely dismissed as if you were, you know, a FCS opponent.
Yeah, we got drugged.
Homecoming opponent. And that's just something that's always going to stick in my head about that team in its totality of an incredible 2019 campaign.
Yeah, yeah. What about you, Doc? What's like one of your fondest memories of or standout members of 2019 LSU?
I remember, honestly, that semifinals game. I remember that being like the first whole game I watched. I mean, I watched you know, bits and pieces, but I remember going to watch that game. I went to a bar to watch that game. I left at halftime.
Yeah.
It's like, this game is over. Like, it was, I was like, this, it was a mismatch, but with the right teams. You know what I'm saying? It was like, the right teams were there, but it was still a mismatch. And LSU just showed you exactly, like, they had no chance. Like, they had no chance, no matter who they put on the field. They could have put 15 people on the field. They still would have lost. It was crazy, bro. I didn't know how awesome that offense was until I really just sat. I was like, okay, yeah, this is not even close, bro.
Yeah. Sam?
I think the thing the first thing though about that championship, the semifinal game, I like that brought me back, because like I'm just thinking about, I was asleep and I woke up and I saw the score of 49-14 or 7 or whatnot. I was like, oh man, they really took it to him. And then Buddy said that's the end of the first half. I was like, what? I thought that was the final score. He said that was halftime. But anyways, the thing is Joe Burrow individual numbers. I mean, the numbers he put up, and then by proxy, like the numbers, like Doc was saying, of the offense, they're just ridiculous. I mean, it's like that stuff you see when you playing Dynasty on NCAA football that's thankfully coming back. That's the kind of stuff you see on there. And then you got to put it on, like, not even – you got to put it on, like, varsity mode to get those kind of numbers. Not even on Iceman, on varsity.
Man.
Yeah, and when you think about it, I think the previous year Joe Burrow had 16 touchdown passes. And then you change your offensive strategy and you go from 16 to 60. That's insane.
Yeah. I mean, that LSU team's by far, I say the greatest offense I've seen, because this Alabama team had numbers, and it did surpass LSU's numbers as far as stats and things, but it was largely Devontae Smith. The LSU's was a lot spread out. Because we saw how the offense changed in the championship game. We saw the offense change when Devontae Smith went out in the second half, and it kind of stalled a bit. But you know, giving credit to Devontae Smith, giving credit to the Alabama offense of this year. But I would take that LSU offense overall, because you got Chase, Jefferson, Moss, and Edwards Hillel to have to worry about versus just Devontae Smith and Najee Harris. Because you had to worry about those two. And that's just how good those two were, was Alabama had those two options. But with LSU, which one you rocking with? Which one you going to slow down? So that's one of the things that I really think about when I think about that team is the number of weapons that they had in that offense, and you had to pick one. And then they had third and fourth receivers who could get the job done as well. They weren't as good as the first two, but they could get the job done. But then, like, we forget about Moss. Moss was a boss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So when it comes to 0-1 Miami, starting back with you, Grant, when it comes to 0-1 Miami, What is like a fond memory or a standout memory from that 0-1 Miami?
When they humble Florida State, man.
Yeah.
Florida State was humbled. Because the year before, there was a lot of talk about how Florida State didn't deserve to be in the national championship game against Oklahoma, given that Miami had beaten Florida State head to head. And so you knew that Miami was gunning for us, and we were a weaker team because we had lost so much from that 2000 season. But at the same time, we were still Florida State. you know, the roster was still loaded with, you know, 4- and 5-star talent. But they came into Tallahassee and just overwhelmed us. Florida State. And I just knew that team, they were out for blood. Once they exercised the demon against Florida State, because they feel like we stole their opportunity, even though they beat us. So they wanted to make sure that we knew who the real deal was that season. And then they went on and just kind of just ran through everybody on the way to just a dominant season.
Yeah. Yeah. Sam.
Yeah, like Javar saying, it's that Florida State game for me, because I actually went to that game, and the feeling in the building was crazy, because like I remember, like Javar was saying, 2000 Florida State team was really stacked. I mean, they lost a championship game, but they was really stacked coming off of what they had, you know, kind of established from 99. But in 2001, they had to replace a quarterback. The quarterback,
Chris Ricci, left.
Yeah, it was Rick's first year. You know, he was highly touted recruit. He was highly touted recruit, but you know, he was still a freshman. So it was crazy. And like in the stadium, whenever he dropped back to pass, it was like Miami defense was so good. I mean, if Ricks completed a pass, people was almost surprised, mm-hmm. because it was the thought was he was gonna throw it to a Miami guy. It was just like it was nuts. Like you could feel the collective, everybody holding their breath whenever Ricks dropped back the pass. Cause it was just like, oh my God, it's gonna be another turnover, and because it was just like especially in the second half after Ed Reed did his speech, it was just like an avalanche. It was crazy. That did like specifically the defense was just so fast. It felt like a college team going against an NFL team. I mean, like there was nowhere to throw. There was nowhere to run. Every time they tried to do something, it was just swallowed up. Like I said, especially in the second half. I mean, it was just crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Doc?
I won't speak on the Florida State game. I don't remember. I don't remember it.
Try to block it out.
I don't know what them boys are talking about. But in any regards to that team, I think – honestly, I realized in hindsight how amazing that team was. You know what I'm saying? When you're in the moment and you're seeing it, it's like, oh, man, this is a great team. But it really took some time for me after the fact. I was like, now that team was different than any team we've ever seen. You know what I'm saying? And even that whole year, they played bully ball. There was nothing you was going to do on offense. Your offense wasn't putting up no points against that team. Like Sam said, you couldn't run, you couldn't pass on. It was nothing. You pass, they picking it off, and not only picking it off, they yet on our ski and they going the other way with it. You know what I mean? They really turned. Their defense really played a major part in getting a lot of points for them. You know what I'm saying? They turned a lot of turnovers into points. Yeah. But that was. That was just a pure dominant team. There was nothing you could do against them on either side of the ball. Just they was gonna beat you, and you just had to go out there and do what you can with them.
Yeah, my one of my greatest memories is just thinking about the depth that they had and how they used it, because being able to switch folk in and out, rotate those D linemen. Rotate them DBs, rotate them running backs. And then, you know, you're like, hold up, this is the third string dude. Why is this third string dude in here better than this other team's first string? And then as the years go, you realize, oh, you were just a superstar and they just had other superstars in front of you. But you were still a superstar anyway. And it's just, it's crazy to think about the depth, the amount of talent on one roster and how they used it. And they just slaughtered teams, just overwhelmed teams. Because coming in, because they had that reputation, they had that Miami swag. So coming in, a lot of teams were intimidated. You had a few teams who were up for the challenge because that Nebraska game, come on, man. Nebraska wasn't ready for that. Nebraska was not ready for that at all. They came in that game. Miami won that game before it even started. They was in Nebraska head before that game started. You could tell because when you watched them play, just the ease that Miami had just overpowering Nebraska because, you know, Nebraska was always known for their offensive and defensive line. It was always known for that. And it was always the thing that these up north teams could dominate these down south teams because in the trenches they were bigger, stronger, faster. That was one pivotal game and one pivotal moment to show that these teams in the south, that's where the talent at because they just overwhelmed and overpowered them in the trenches and it wasn't even close. That option was broke. So that's how I feel about that, man.
Man, and speaking to the depth, I do remember one game when they were playing Washington Huskies and there was a punt block and it was returned for a touchdown. And I remember the announcer saying teams are going to be sad when Jeremy Shockey leaves because this is his backup. And his backup is Kellen Winslow Jr.
Right.
And that's it's just crazy the amount of talent that was just laying in wait for that team.
Yeah. Yeah. Them boys was tight, man. Them boys was live out there on that field, man. All right. So if 2019 LSU head to head meet 0-1 Miami, one game for the fate of the world, start with you, Doc. Who wins and why?
0-1.
Why?
I don't think there's a football team ever existent in college that can beat the team. For everything we've been speaking about for the last few weeks, it's one thing to have superstars on the field. It's another thing to have them on the bench. And on the bench behind the ones on the bench, you know, and we're not just talking about superstars, we're talking about guys who've proven themselves to be superstars and Hall of Famers in the NFL. You know what I'm saying? And this is what they have on their team. Like, I can't speak to what these guys at LSU will become. But I can tell you what these guys had on that team then. I can tell you what 0-1 had then. It's just I don't see nobody beating that team. Nobody.
All right. What about you, Sam? Who win? One game for the fate of the world.
I think it's close. Even as Doc was talking, I was struggling going back and forth in my head. I'll go with 0-1 Miami. I think LSU obviously got the edge of the quarterback, but I think the overall team depth, like you were saying, is just Miami is just too much. As good and explosive as LSU offense is, I have trouble picturing them marching up and down the field like they did on a lot of these teams that they face. I have trouble seeing them do that. Against Miami, their front four, the linebackers, secondary, the whole package. I think they would be able to slow LSU down enough to where that Miami's own offense would be able to put up enough points to overcome in the end. But it would be close. I think it would be probably a one score game.
About you, Grant?
You know, of all the matchups that we've discussed in this bracket, this is probably the one that I would actually want to see in real life.
Yeah.
Because this is probably the greatest offense that this Miami team could have ever seen with their eliteness at quarterback, at receiver, and at running back. And just a position with this is the greatest defense that you know LSU could have possibly been matched up against, just from all three levels of the defense, mm-hmm. the linebackers, and the secondary, along with the depth on the line, linebackers in the secondary. And so I've always been a offense wins championships person. So I'm going to be a contrarian, and I'm going to pick LSU.
I like it.
Okay.
I like
it. Okay. So for me, I believe that Miami would be able to slow down LSU's running game and make them one-dimensional. Because Edwards-Hilaire was good, but – Edwards-Hilaire wasn't that exceptional back like that. And when we're talking about Miami's depth, Miami has the depth and the athletes to match up with LSU's athletes. I still think Chase will get his. I still think Jefferson. I don't think those boys would be shut down. But I do think with the ability to make LSU one-dimensional and make them a passing team, can LSU's O-line hold up against Miami's D-line if they one-dimensional? That's what I'll be thinking about. And then on the other side, can LSU slow down Miami's running game? Because if LSU can slow down Miami's running game, they got a chance as far as making this a strength-on-strength with their offense against Miami's defense. But if they can't slow down Miami's running game, it's going to be issues. And Miami got three backs to throw at you. So that's what I think about with this. So I can see Miami having being able to slow down that running game. I guess what I'm thinking about is we saw Edwards Hill, you know, Super Bowl. We saw what happened with Edwards Hill. When you can put together a great scheme against an offense like that, and not saying that would have happened to Edwards-Hilaire, but when you can put a great scheme against an offense and you have the actual players to execute the scheme, you can make some things happen, especially if your own offense is able to execute and give you time to rest and march down the field and wear down the other team's defense. So trying to be as fair as possible, but in thinking that when I'm thinking about this matchup, I can see LSU's running game being slowed down and them being one-dimensional, so I would give it to Miami. So we're jumping you, Javard.
I think he got a point, though. I think this is the best matchup you can put on the field from everything we've seen so far.
It is, from an offensive standpoint and a defensive standpoint, because I think FSU's offense put up more numbers, but I think when you talk about players across the board for offense, this will be the better offense, and players across the board for defense, this will be the better this will be the best defense.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. All right, well, let's go to our numbers. As we talk about these numbers. All right. So just a recap, our criteria we're using to determine who goes to the next round: margin of victory, number of All-Americans, total defensive rankings, number of players drafted, and total offensive rankings. And I said Miami, Doc said Miami, Sam said Miami, Javar said LSU. He wanted to be different. Okay. All right. So margin of victory, LSU is 38.7. Miami is 33. Number of All-Americans, LSU has 4 consensus and 5 total. Miami has 2 consensus and 5 total. So there's a tied number of All-Americans. Total defensive rankings, LSU's defense is ranked 33rd. Miami's defense is ranked 1st. So Miami gets the nod in defense, while LSU get the nod in margin of victory. Number of players drafted, LSU has 14, with the caveat of the team is still 2019 team. Everybody hasn't been drafted, and Miami has 33. So Miami gets the nod in number of players drafted. Total offensive rankings, LSU's offensive ranking is 1st, and Miami is 8th. So this means we have a tie. LSU took the nod in margin of victory, total offensive ranking. Miami took the nod in total defensive rankings and total and number of players drafted. And there's a tie in number of All-Americans. But what we did, we came prepared. We came prepared because we knew we was dealing with a tie, and we had to, we did our best to come up with an objective tiebreaker. So nobody won't be like, oh man, y'all choosing the team that y'all like the best. It's an objective tiebreaker. So we're going position by position and comparing who has the best unit. And so we can discuss this a bit. So quarterback for quarterback, LSU has the better quarterback. Joe Burrow is better than Ken Dorsey.
It's not even close.
Right.
The greatest season we've ever seen,
right,
versus what essentially was a game manager.
Yeah, there's no argument. The only person probably argue that's Ken Dorsey's daddy, but that's it.
I don't even think he would even argue it, bro.
Hey, he won the ring. All right, so running back for running back. Who had better running backs? Well, Miami had. Go ahead, Grant.
I don't even know who LSU's backup running back was, but I know Miami had Clinton Portis, Willis McGahee, Najee Davenport, and Frank Gore.
Right. Yeah, they just had a stable. They just had a stable for whatever kind of situation, whether it was a short yardage, you know, running outside, running between the tackles, Pat catching passes out the backfield, everything.
Hiller was good. He was good. He had 1,400 yards. But, like you say, when it, like, the there's a Davis Price guy, there's a John Emery Jr., some other cat, we don't know them. But what we do know is Portis, Gore, and McGahee. And we do know that they were better than Edwards Hiller. So Miami would get the nod and running back. So wide receivers, it's not even close. LSU, yeah, the better wide receiver. It's not even close. Give Andre Johnson his shout out. But in college, Andre Johnson didn't do what these boys, didn't do what Jefferson and Chase did. So got to be real. Offensive line, Miami. We remember Miami offensive line, and like Sam made a good point. One thing about Burrow is we knew Burrow could scramble because at times Burrow had to scramble. We knew Ken Dorsey couldn't run, and he never had to run. So, but just overall, just being as far as production, Miami's offensive line was a better unit, had better depth, and it, the production was better than LSU's offensive line. All right, so defensive line, we went with Miami. Miami had a better defensive line than LSU. Hell, defense, fuck it, just defense, Miami.
I mean, you can just go back to the total rankings. Miami was number one in defense, and LSU
with 33.
33rd.
Yeah.
So they were just, even if you're looking at just the Power Fives, they are middle of the pack of Power Fives. Like they had standout players on defense when you look at the DBs and some of the linebackers, but as an 11-man unit, you know, they benefited from having one of the greatest offenses we've ever seen. And so you're playing a lot of teams that are from behind and they're now one-dimensional. And so it makes it a lot easier to play defense in those situations. And they were still 33rd.
Yeah, they did what they were asked to do, which was just not blow the game. I mean, like, they didn't have to go out and shut nobody down. They just had to not stink and not be terrible. And they did that.
Yeah, I respect their defense. I don't think LSU's defense was close to even close to being trash. But no. But let's just be real. Standouts for that team was Dale Pitt and Stingley. Of course, they had other guys who were good, but like we said, Miami, just talent wise, Miami's defense on all three levels, it was just better, and it was the number one defense in the country that year versus the 33rd defense. So with that being said, Miami would, so because we've our tiebreaker is if we compare team by team, which team we think unit by unit would be better. And that's what we did. And so Miami, out of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1, 2, 3. So out of 8 units, Miami take the nod with 6. Hold up, I counted this shit wrong.
It should be 7.
7.
What the fuck did I? Oh, I did receiver twice. My crazy ass. All right. So out of 7 units, Miami got 4 out of 7 units. 5 out of 7 units. Yeah. 5 out of 7 units. I'm over here.
LSU had just all the LSU's quarterback and
wide receiver. Right. Receivers. So Miami took running back, offensive line, defensive line, linebacker, and DB. So with that being said, that's our tiebreaker. That's our objective tiebreaker. With that being said, that will put Miami on to round 4, which is our championship round.
Okay.
Owen Mia in that championship round. Are we are we happy with that? We feel good about that. We don't feel like there's no bias. We need to take something back or think about it before we finalize it.
No, that's something they earn.
Yeah, okay. I think we put the brackets. I mean, that was one of the teams that everybody kind of said that's going to be one that's going to be there.
Yeah, even before we dug into the numbers and, you know, deciding how we're going to rank the teams for the bracket, it's one of the teams that you thought would be successful against any of the other teams in the bracket. And you expected them to get here. And through as objective as we could be trying to go through this tournament, you know, we're still not surprised that they advanced this far.
Right, right. I mean, it's just an ultra-talented team that we're dealing with, and can't deny what they brought to college football because that is the standard. So certain teams like that 01 Miami, that 04 USC, 2013 FSU, this 2019 LSU. Those are certain teams as far as, even if not just for the school, but for the region and for the conference, are standards. Mm-hmm. So shout out to those teams. But shout out to Miami for making it to our final round. And the question is they going to win it all? So next week we're going to come back and we're going to see the matchup between 2013 FSU and 2004 USC, which is that's a good matchup. That's a good matchup. I want to see how objective y'all boys can be next week.
a lot of star power, a lot of Heisman Trophy winners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
There's a lot going on. Cause that's a great matchup to get to this final round. So that's gonna be interesting. So all right. We got one part of our final round set. So like I said, we're gonna come back next week. We're gonna cliffhang y'all. We're gonna come back next week, give y'all 2013 FSU and 04 USC. So with that being said, we got our advancement for the day. We're gonna transition to our weekly rant and talk about some of this crazy stuff that happened in the world of sports. So have y'all heard this story about the Tokyo Olympic president, Yoshiro Mori, who had to resign after these comments he made? You heard about the sound?
Yeah, I saw about it on Twitter, man. Well, I'll let you. I know if you're just gonna go ahead and read the article.
Well, you can say what you go ahead and say what you're gonna say, then I'll come back and read.
It's one of those things. It's like, I mean, he an older gentleman, so he kind of stuck in his ways. But you just gotta be smarter than that, man. I mean, I don't even want to say I kind of try. It's even hard to even say I was trying to understand what he was saying. Because sometimes when people put their foot in their mouth, you know, making a general statement, you could kind of say, well, I see where he was coming from. But the way he even tried to explain it, it was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it was in reference to women's ability to be a part of the Olympic Committee. So let me read. And so Yoshiro Mori, the embattled president of the Tokyo Olympics Organization Committee, resigned Friday following backlash over sexist comments he made suggesting women talk too much in meetings. And see, right. And it's like, the funny part is he said it. That's the funny part, because it's stupid. Like, no matter how you feel, you said it. And you kept saying it, and you said it with your chest. He went and watched the Kevin Hart special. I say it with my chest. And he went and he said this with his chest. So it's like, as of today, I will resign from the president position, Morris said during an executive board and council meeting. My inappropriate comments have caused a lot of chaos. So if you can come back and realize that your comments were inappropriate. Nothing was telling you that they were inappropriate when it was coming, when you was thinking about saying it. Because I know you thought about saying it before you said it. At least I hope you did. But so he's an 83-year-old former prime minister of Japan, sparked outrage last week after he made the remarks during an executive board meeting that was held online. When giving his private opinion about the Japanese Olympic Committee goal of increasing the number of female board of directors from 20% to more than 40%, Mori expressed concern about how that would affect the length of meetings, according to a report by Japan's largest daily newspapers. A meeting of an executive board that includes many women would take time, Mori was quoted as saying by the newspaper. Women are competitive. When someone raises his or her hand and sparks and speaks, they probably think they should speak too. And that's why they end up making comments. He also referred to the Tokyo Olympics organizing committee, saying it includes about 7 women, but they all know how to behave, the newspaper reported. Moore apologized for his remarks at a hastily prepared press conference the following day, but by then calls for his resignation were already made, and yada, 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 he end up retired. So basically, buddy, like, I don't really want more women on these board because they make these meetings go too long because theirs is talk too much. And we can't have that because I'm 83. I got to get home and do what 83-year-olds do. And y'all try to put these women on the board and they talk too much. What we doing here? That's what Morris said.
So was this like a Robert Sterling? Is his name Robert Sterling with the Clippers? It said it was a private conversation.
Yeah.
And somebody leaked it.
Donald Sterling.
Yeah, like he was like basically like they was talking about the meeting. They had a meeting about the meeting.
Right.
Or something like that. And like, so yeah, it wasn't a press conference, but it got out what he said in the meeting.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
But and then the thing that, like I said, like the thing that tripped me out is like he made it about gender, but like, I mean, we all you got those kind of people that be in the mean, regardless. Like yeah. we all in the mean, and you all know it's gonna be somebody there that's gonna like when the person lead the mean say any questions, and everybody ready to go, but he go this one person. Yeah, I got a question. When everybody ready to go out to me, and that could be a dude or it could be a lady. Yeah. In my office, it happened to be a guy. I already know what I'm thinking. I don't have a mean with his ass because he gonna make the mean go long.
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie. At my job, it's me. It's me and the lady that work with us. It's, we always asking goddamn good questions. but come, I mean, okay. 83, because I get what people are saying. You're 83 and you're stuck in your ways. But they also tell us with age comes wisdom. And at 83, he should have a whole lot of wisdom. And I'm not saying he can't feel how he feel. But when you, because there are a lot of men like him, old men, no matter the race, old men are getting caught saying things, and this is happening across the board. Like the old white guy who was the announcer for one of the baseball teams, he got caught saying something sexist about the LGBT community. And you can feel how you feel, but you swallow that pill or something. I don't know, because if it keep happening, you can't go around expressing like those particular views. We're not saying you can't have them, but you can't go around expressing those particular views. Ain't no safe spaces. And you got to be wiser in how you express yourself. Like, you can feel how you want to feel, even though your feeling may not be. It may not be productive. It could be ignorant, which probably most likely is. This one, I mean, old ass man, he don't want to hear women talking. The world is changing. Get over it. The world is changing. But it's just like, you got to be smarter in how you express yourself.
And he was a former prime minister.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that part of the issue is, you know, just globally and you know, most adults spend the most of their weeks at work in some form of capacity. And unfortunately, that's not the place where you're allowed to voice every single thought and opinion that you have about everything. It's just no longer the place with a lot of the social movements and the impact that social media and reporting has on that can have on some person's professional career, whether that's in sports or any form of business where you could be in some type of public light. And so people just have to come to grips with the fact that the workplace is not the same place that it was even 10 years ago. And that's just something that's got to change. It's going to be harder for people to change the way they've always thought and believed and were taught how to think and feel about certain topics. And so that's going to take some time to change how people perceive those different things. But what time is not allotted for you to do that at work. You know, it's you got to stop cold turkey,
right?
Or you're gonna be out of your job, or out of your career, or you're gonna be retiring.
Yeah, and that's happening a lot. But I mean, it's like, and I'm thinking, as I got through talking the last time, one thing popped in my head: cultural differences and things. But even around the world, culture is changing as far as how women are treated. Over here in America, our women have always had a lot more freedom than women in other parts of the world. So still, like, giving that, because I don't want to be the dude who try to put my American brain on other people's culture. You know, I don't like to see other people do that, so I'm not trying to do that. But also just thinking, like, okay, so, but what are the women in Japan saying? And clearly the women in Japan don't like this because there's outrage from women in Japan. So if the women saying, we don't like this, all right, well, buddy, what you doing ain't cool. So you got to chill out. And you can say, well, this is how we've always done it. But that don't mean it's always been right. So tradition don't always mean you continue to do it.
Yeah, and you're talking about an 83-year-old man who's used to traditional Western norms, like women are seen and not heard. And that's what he's speaking to. That's right. Exactly what he's speaking to. Not knowing or understanding, especially now, you just can't, like you said, you're entitled to have those. You can feel how you want to feel. You can feel exactly how you want to feel. But it comes to when you start to express that, you have to deal with the consequences. You have to deal with the back. Those things come along with you expressing yourself. Just like JG said, yeah, you can't go to work just saying what you want to because you feel like it. You can, but you probably ain't gonna be here long. You
know? Yeah, yeah.
You're gonna get your up out of here.
Yeah, but like, I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know. Like, I'm cool with freedom of speech, but there's a fine line between when you're using what you're saying to try to marginalize a group of people just because of how you personally feel. It's like, hell on, man. Get the hell on. All right, so that's what happened with Buddy. I ain't gonna try to remember his name, Buddy. So let's go talk about y'all favorite football coach. Urban Josephus Myers. Josephus, that's gonna be his middle name today. Urban Josephus Meyer. So Urban Meyer has recently been hired as the coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So yesterday, there was a lot of outcry because he hired the ex-strength coach from Iowa, Chris Doyle. And Chris Doyle resigned from Iowa. Resigned. With over $1 million payout because over 50 players came out against him saying that Doyle was basically racist to them and treating them bad and being discriminating against them and all these things. And over 50 players. Doyle was the strength coach for Iowa for over 21 years. Now, what was interesting, I was watching Skip and Shannon talk about this, and Shannon made a great point. Chris Broussard. It was Chris and Rob. So Chris Broussard made a great point. I don't know what the hell Urban Meyer was thinking with this particular hire with Chris Doyle's background. Because it's not like Chris Doyle couldn't have been the hottest ticket on the market. When the last time Iowa been good? In the 21 years Chris Doyle was at Iowa, when was Iowa ever thought of as a premier program?
They had one year they went to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, and I think they went to the Orange Bowl one year against USC.
Oh, yeah.
Carlson Palmer before USC became USC.
Yeah, I think so.
They got drugged in that game.
Right. And see, that was the point that was being made is, when you did see Iowa, they were getting drugged and pushed all over the field. So
they got drugged in that Rose Bowl too against Stanford.
Right. So it ain't like Chris Doyle was the hottest ticket on the market. Mm-hmm. So the question. So let's start with this. Let's start with you, Javon. Why do you think? And I know I'm not asking you to speak or think for Urban Meyer, but just for conversation, why do you think Urban Meyer made this move?
When you are in a position of power or you have a perceived position of power, one of the things that you want to do with that power is to help people that you know and care about and have relationships succeed as well. And I believe that's as far as he thought it through. From his perspective, he already lost his job over something controversial, something that he intended to do for the rest of his career. So he's a buddy of mine. He has a good heart. Time has passed. I'm going to give him a second chance because I have this power, or at least this perception of power. And I know who this guy is in his heart, not what everyone else is saying in the media. And I honestly think that's as far as he thought it through. I don't think he sees his players as some type of collaborative group in pursuit of a Super Bowl. I think he sees them as employees, as subordinates. They work for me. They don't work with me. The coaches work with me. Players are the players. And we're just contracted to go get this job done. Yeah. I don't think he thought it any further than that.
So when Chris Doyle was fired from Iowa, does anybody remember any type of publicized reconciliation or rehabilitation or anything that Chris Doyle would have done to improve his image or even help change his mindset? Anybody ever remember any information about that?
I mean, there probably was some, but Iowa is so irrelevant on the grand scheme of college football, and the strength coach is irrelevant on the grand scheme of college football. Because if you go back to Urban Meyer when he was at Ohio State and one of his assistants got fired for
abusing his wife.
Abuse, Ohio State is, one of the top three brands in college football. So you saw the interview with that coach, apologizing for what he did. Because Ohio State is just so much higher profile than Iowa.
Right.
Some of that stuff might have happened with that coach, but it wasn't on ESPN 1 because they just thought that important.
Yeah.
And also we're racism has always been in the media. Women's equality is something that's more new. That's good. That's being really broadcasted and really taking a lot of attention on media platforms. So it could have been a different crime that Zach Smith committed that probably wouldn't have got the coverage that it would have did because of the specific crime that he committed.
Right. What about you, Doc? What you?
What? Well, I think you hit it on the head, bro. Like, I mean, what else? What other reason do you see hiring him unless there's a relationship there? There had to be some relationship of some sort, and he feels like he reconciled to whatever extent it was that he felt like he could offer him the job. And do we know if? Buddy put, he probably did what everybody else do when they get caught up in a scandal like that. He probably put out a statement. I got to be better. That's not who I am. And, it's not conducive to who I am and yada, yada, yada. And I, just like anybody else, Like, but like you said, bro, I don't remember it. Me personally.
I will say this just to that point, and this is not based off my information. This is based off like Chris Broussard, Rob Parker. They got way more resources than we do. So according to them, they didn't find any kind of statement, apologies, any type of reconciliation or rehabilitation action. So according to them, whether it happened or not, I can't confirm. So,
like I said, and even if to what extent, even if you do apologize, what does that mean to the players who've already had to come in and say, hey, man, this dude called me all kind of whatever, and, whatever the extent of the abuse or verbal abuse that they spoke to, just you apologizing, what does that change? You know what I mean? You still did it. You know what I'm saying? So now, even with that being said, you can do something like that and still get what's essentially a promotion. So, you know, I mean, he won.
And you ain't got to live in Iowa no more.
Right.
I mean, but yeah, because he left with $1 million, and like I say, he ain't got to live in Iowa. What about you, Sam?
The thing about this, I think it's two things that made everybody do this. One, like what Javar was saying, this is one of his friends. You know, like as much progress has been made with in the NFL with like higher minority coaches, it's so much less so in college, because college is very much still, you know, the good old boys. Right. So like everybody gonna get in there and he gonna hire who he wanna hire. And then also, like what I was just saying, this is one of those things that I don't think Urban Meyer thought that anybody was going to question him, because I think he still thought it was going to be like it was at Ohio State.
Right.
Or even at a college where, like, if this had still been at Ohio State, if he had somehow stayed at Ohio State, which I think it, because of what he said, I think if he wanted to, I think he could have.
If he wanted to.
But let's say he did and he wanted to bring this guy in, I don't think they would have questioned it. Because, you know, if a college coach, if he win, he pretty much got the town at his whim. They're not gonna question what he's doing. They're not gonna say, hey, what about this? And in college, I mean, it's starting to shift now with like what you saw with what happened in Iowa. But in college, it's still very much like what Javar was saying, you know, like the coach is the guy, the players are subordinates. Whereas in the pros, if the players say, hey, we don't like this guy, the ownership is going to be like, hey, you got to do something, because we got to have these players happy.
Yeah.
If the players ain't happy, you know, like they matter. They matter in the pros, like they matter more than the coaches. I mean, the coaches matter, but I mean, like, look at this season. I mean, like, Bill Belichick, he ain't going to no Super Bowls without Tom Brady. So, in the NFL, the players reign supreme, and if they have a problem with this, or if this is seen as a bad hire, it's not like it was in college where you are this all-powerful. CEO type where you could just do whatever and everybody's just gonna yes man to you.
Right.
And even in the NFL, there are only a few coaches that can actually do something to a player. If you think about somebody like Bill Parcells when he was in Dallas, he could actually deactivate a player. Or you think about somebody like the coach for the Raiders, John Gruden, he was at Tampa. He activated Keyshawn Johnson. That's because he actually had some power. But ain't no first-year head coach or a second-year head coach going to be able to deactivate a star on the team. They just going to have to deal with it.
Look, I don't care how much success Urban Meyer had in college. Clearly, his power ain't what he might have thought it was, or what somebody may perceive it to be, because Chris Doyle ended up resigning after 35 hours. Now, a question I'm asking myself is, well, damn, these type of friends Urban Meyer keep. Well, what type of person really is Urban Meyer? Because we know at least one of your friends got over 50 racist allegations, and we know at least one of your friends got allegations of beating his wife. Well, damn, Urban.
That's my issue with Urban Meyer is that I had with him for a long time is that he talks about being like, you know, oh, we want to do things the right way and have like this strong moral sense of character. But at the end of the day, man, you just care about winning.
Look at Florida.
Winning.
Look at the stuff that happened and the people that were on the roster at Florida. And like we found out stuff with Hernandez was covered up. Aaron Hernandez should have been in jail in Florida.
Right. And it's not that I have a problem if you I just care about winning. But like just say that.
Yeah.
That's my issue. Don't come up here and be like, oh, you know, you just you know got this high moral fiber and you know and everything like that. But in reality, you just all about winning. Just say I want to win. I want to do whatever it takes to win. I think people will respect him more if he just said that, and then you could know where he stands.
Right.
Because for some reason, you know, lying and you not being able to prove that someone's lying is more noble than being arrogant, I guess.
Right.
Like just say what you mean. And
right.
I know where you stand.
Right.
As opposed to trying to figure it out.
So this is a statement that Urban Meyer made to defend the hiring of Christos. I'm gonna read two statements. I'm gonna read his statement defending the hiring. I'm gonna read a statement after Doyle resigned. So he says, I've known Chris for close to 20 years. Our relationship goes back to when I was at Utah. He was the number one strength coach, and really he was doing sports performance before sports performance became a high priority in college sports. I've known him. I've studied him. We've had a relationship. I vetted him thoroughly along with our general manager and our owner, feeling great about the hire and about his expertise at the position. That's what Urban Meyer said. He vetted him. He's known him for 20 years. That don't make you look good. Like, because especially now that Doyle has retired and just the allegations against Doyle. So it's like, so what type of, have y'all wore any hoods over y'all heads in the last 20 years? Are y'all favorite colors red and white? Because, I mean, you know, that's because when you hanging out with somebody who's perceived as a racist to the degree that Chris Doyle was, and then you make a statement like that's my dog. That's like, all right, me and Sam have known each other since kindergarten. I turn out to be some horrible person. Hey, Sam, you better not be trying to defend my character if I turn out to be some kind of horrible person, because that's going to make you look stupid. It's going to make you look like, so you'd have known this dude since kindergarten, and this dude out here doing this crazy stuff. So what type of dude is you?
You'd be better off just saying, you know, like, something along the lines of like, you know, you shocked at the behavior, but it's not something that you're gonna associate yourself with. So we ain't friends no more.
You can't be my friend no more. You shouldn't be.
Because let's be real now. Like there are, and I'm not defending it, but I know, you know, there are things we don't know about, you know, the people we've known for a long time. So
that's true.
I don't know if we can't. I can't really say he didn't know that. We can't say he did. You know what I'm saying? So this is always kind of tough, especially. But his hand was forced. So I think he just went to him like, listen, man, you're gonna have to just resign, bro. Either I'm gonna fire you or resign. I can't stay around here. You know what I'm saying? Because like you said, for him to allow him to stay there, it's like now you become complicit. So it doesn't look good for him. So it's. My hand forced, bro. I don't want to fire you. Go ahead and resign.
And what I gotta know is, who is these people PR person? Like,
me?
It's so crazy because they could have actually just jumped out and acknowledged what he did wrong, mm-hmm. and talked about, you know, the counseling that he's going through, talked about the minority groups that he's, you know, doing community service with, trying to, you know, mend those things, and just did something like that. That was brief. And you know what? America would have forgave him, and he is still having a job because he's showing some remorse. And, you know, the talking heads on TV would have said it's good because, you know, everyone needs a second chance in life, and you know, he's trying to be a part of a solution instead of just being a part of the problem. And we would have moved on. Mm-hmm. They didn't even have the presence of mind to do that. They ain't even had the presence of mind to just lie to us.
I was just saying, they could just lie to me. Just lie to me.
Hey, but you know what? One thing I also find interesting about the Jaguars is their owner, but also perception with the owner, because the perception is because Shad Khan is not a white man that he automatically stands against racism and racist people and racist actions. And that's not necessarily the case with Shad Khan. He really don't have no dog in the fight unless somebody comes at him personally. And so I see a lot of people in the sports media when things happen with the owners and things, they always say, "Which I wonder why Shad Khan didn't say this. I wonder why Shad Khan didn't do this." And it's like, well, as a black man in America, just being real with myself, Shad Khan don't have no dog in this fight. Outside of he got a whole bunch of black players. He got more green money, and what's most important is the other white owners. So Shad Khan don't have no dog in his fight. So, you know, it just, when I hear that from analysts, it's just like, I get where they're coming from, because you would expect, especially in this day and age, people are expecting all people of color to be against white supremacy. But it's like, well, all people of color, really not. Half the country voted for Trump, and half the country ain't all white. So,
especially when you got a good chunk of the white people in this country that didn't vote for Trump.
Right.
So let me read this. It says, this is after Chris Doyle's resignation. He says, "Chris Doyle came to us this evening to submit his resignation, and we have accepted. Chris did not want to be a distraction to what we're building in Jacksonville. We are responsible for all aspects of our program, and in retrospect, should have given greater consideration to how his appointment may have affected all involved. We wish him the best as he moves forward in his career." But that just made me question, like, Urban Meyer's decision making as like a man and just a person, not necessarily as a football coach, because we know what he can do as a football coach on the collegiate level, but just Urban Meyer, just overall decision making, a lot of times it seems like he make a lot of moves that land him in trouble.
I mean, like I say, I just think it was just he thought since I'm the head coach, nobody's gonna question it.
It's the disease of arrogance.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I was listening to somebody. They were like, "Man, that damn Urban Meyer. I'm tired of that Urban Meyer." Hey man, so I'm just wondering what type of coach Urban Meyer is going to be overall, though, in the professional level, like at Jacksonville, of all places. We talked about this before, but Jacksonville don't have the talent that Urban Meyer is used to dealing with. Even, I'm not saying Utah had talent, but Utah wasn't at the bottom of the barrel either. But Jacksonville is one of the bottom of the barrel teams in the NFL right now. So I'm wondering what type of coach he could be, because if he can make Jacksonville a contender over a number of years, then his respect level will grow as an overall coach in the sport of football as a whole. So, all right, Irvin. Hey man, so y'all got any final thoughts, any final comments, anything? So we shut this thing down. Nope.
Oh, man.
Hey man. Football is over. Oh, did the Super Bowl come out the way y'all expected it? Because we did pick the Bucks. We did pick the Bucks.
I was gonna say, I expected Tampa Bay to win. I didn't expect it to be that one sided.
Yeah, 9 points. I expected more than 9 points. But I know most of us, if not, except for Javard, but the rest of us, we picked Tampa Bay, so we should have betted somebody and we'd have had some money. But either way, it came out. Shout out to the Bucks. Shout out to Brady. Shout out to Shaq, Barrett.
I will say I moved a smidge closer to putting Brady past Manning. Hey. I still ain't there yet.
But did you hear? Did you hear Max?
He impressive.
Did you hear Max Kellerman said he still don't believe Brady's the GOAT? Cool, he believes Joe Montana, but he said Tom Brady is the Robert Ory of the NFL.
That's ridiculous.
Max Kellerman.
I mean, Tom Brady is a compiler, but when you're talking about the greatest of all time in basketball, you never talk about Robert Ory. Mm-hmm. So that's just disrespectful to compare Tom Brady to Robert Ory, because Robert Ory, he was a small forward.
Small, powerful.
You never talk about Robert Ory. Not only do you not talk about him being one of the greatest of all time, you don't even talk about him being one of the greatest forwards.
Right. He won 7 championships, but, I mean, everybody knows he was a role player on the team. Yeah.
Right. He played his role well, but he was a role player. Right.
Yeah. He made big shots in the playoffs, which is what you're supposed to do because ain't nobody guarding you. So you're supposed to be open. And you're supposed to be able to hit the damn shot.
So
like Jackson and Steve Kerr.
Right. That's what you get paid to do. Just like if your ass drive UPS, you get paid to deliver them packages in good condition. So real quick, is Brady the greatest quarterback in NFL history?
Yes.
I still say
Peyton.
I should say Grant.
If we throw out championships, it's Aaron Rodgers.
We ain't throwing them out though, bro.
See, that's the thing. I mean, I know we talked about this a little bit behind the scenes, but like, I see what Javar is saying, man. I have a hard time using a team accomplishment when you're talking about an individual player.
I mean, but even in that, how did this person contribute to that championship? That's how I think about it.
This man just went
the first three. I mean, the first three, Tom Brady wasn't the reason why the Patriots won the championships. The problem is that Tom Brady was the reason why they won the second three championships.
and even in the first three, I don't think anybody. Well, you have some people, but the consensus won't argue that Brady wasn't the reason. But in those championships, Brady did make key plays and put his team in the key positions for them to win. So I think that's why that's the credit he does deserve for that. But overall, he was not the reason that they won.
Mm-mm.
So. It's hard not to
because he's the only constant. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then if you put somebody else there, do they do the same thing? Like, if you put another quarterback on that team,
that's what I said. If they like when we used to go with Brady and Manning, if you had switched them and you dropped Peyton Manning with the Patriots, they would have won 10 championships
in a row.
I don't know about that, bro.
So how many would Indianapolis have won?
Zero.
If Tom Brady was in Indianapolis, zero.
None.
Y'all gotta knock it off.
Yeah.
No, that. Yeah. Now we got to run out of time. But I'm saying, now look what happened. That year, right when they were still the year before, they was. What the number one seed 14-2. The next year, Peyton Manning off, they win 2 games. Everything else was the same except for Peyton Manning. They won 2 games.
How many Super Bowls the Patriots won without Brady?
Okay, I feel you, but I'm saying, and then like go to Brady
because they was trash before they was trash and okay before Brady took over.
You go to Brady. The year what it was they have the year where they go undefeated. They go undefeated. Then the next year he tears ACL. He missing. They put Matt Castle in. They win team games.
But did they win it all?
They didn't win it all, but they won.
That is not the point, bro. That is not the point.
It is the point.
That's why you play.
They was competitive. They was competitive. The Colts were not competitive without Peyton Manning.
They was competitive. No, I was going to say, well, Andrew.
Right. They was non-competitive.
Listen, bro. No,
that's cool. I mean that sound good, and that's been your argument.
It sound real good.
But let's just be real. There's a reason why Brady had the success in New England that he had. There's a reason why Peyton Manning didn't have that same type of success in Indianapolis. Yeah, Peyton had something that nobody else had, but Brady had something. Clearly that nobody else had, because he's still winning Super Bowls.
Yeah. I mean, like, I won't, like,
because you play to win championships.
I never say, like, I'm not going to be one of those guys that be like, oh, Bill Belichick carried Tom Brady, because that's silly. But, like, I don't feel like I said, it's like, oh, because he got 7 championships, that automatically make him the greatest of all time.
What else does he need to do? Like, what else does Brady need to do? He got all the numbers. Y'all know y'all like numbers. He got 7.
It's nothing he can't do, because, like, if you said who's the most accomplished of all time, it's Tom Brady. Like, hands down. That's just like I said. Okay, if I try to put it into another arena, right? Okay. Who would you say is a better actor? You know, like Denzel Washington or Robert Downey Jr.? Tom right? Hanks. Okay, either way. like put Tom Hanks in with Denzel. But you look at because Robert Downey Jr. been in those Avenger movies, he grossed more than any other actor of all time. But he's not better than Denzel Washington.
But here's the difference. When we talking about you talking okay, not to go too far. Let's go back to football. I understand your analogy. The goal of playing football in the NFL is to win a Super Bowl. Tom Brady has been the constant for all 7 of his championships, 6 with one team and 1 with another team. All of these teams have had an opportunity to win with however many quarterbacks they won with. This man have actually been to more championships than some teams ever been to the freaking anything. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And even what Grant said, I think Aaron Rodgers is a much better, if we talk about just athlete.
Well, we talk that, and that you talk about just pure talent, though.
Yeah, pure talent. Tom Brady ain't even, it's stuff Aaron Rodgers can do, Tom Brady wish he could. But when we talk about the greatest of all time, when you come in and say, my goal as a quarterback is to win and win the championship, nobody better than Brady. Nobody.
Well, then we would just be arguing semantics. I mean, because you can't on the one hand say this guy is way more talented than this guy, but then say that he's better. That don't
make sense. You can.
The goal is to win the championship. And he the constant. He the one constant.
Look, and the point you make it sound, okay, there's no argument or there's little argument against Aaron Rodgers as far as his skill set and tools and what he brings to the game as a quarterback, throwing the ball, how he can throw the ball, and what he can do with his legs, like skill sets. But when we're talking about it, Aaron Rodgers is in the conversation, but would you take all of that and say, all right, all of this makes Aaron Rodgers a better quarterback than Peyton Manning?
No. Not better than Peyton Manning.
Right. Right.
But I wouldn't even do it, but I wouldn't do it for Brady either. That not Javon. See, Javon said Aaron Rodgers. Now,
I get that, but
I can see why he said that. But what I'm saying is, like, I wouldn't have a problem with people saying Brady, but what I have a problem with is people say it's Brady because of the championships.
No, I get you. The championships don't they don't tell the whole story, but they are a part of the story that you have to count.
When we're having these conversations, the championships is always a story. It's like people will not even allow you to utter the words LeBron James and Michael Jordan in the same sentence because
that argument is crazy.
Because Michael Jordan never lost in the finals. And LeBron James can win four straight titles with the Lakers, and people will still not even have a conversation because Michael Jordan never lost in the finals.
See, now I still don't like that. I never liked that argument. I never liked that comparison. I still don't like that comparison because the trajectory of the careers, they're two totally different people. And this is that particular argument is Michael Jordan fans who are sensitive about Michael Jordan and his legacy, and they don't want anybody else to overtake Jordan as the idea of the GOAT. But it's just like, I hate that argument. Everything about them is so different, and just trying to make them together, because within that argument, the Jordan people have to bring up championships. And not to say that it's a bad argument. It's a horrible argument. And a lot of those people have to bring up championships because they can't accurately articulate a good argument for Michael Jordan like they should be able to if they're fans. But Michael Jordan is the greatest shooting guard of all time. LeBron James is the greatest small forward of all time. Let's just leave it at that, in my opinion.
And Aaron Rodgers is the quarterback of all time.
No, your opinion. That's Brett Favre, right?
Pay him in.
Nah, I would take Aaron Rodgers in a heartbeat over Brett Favre.
Okay, so what do you use then? If we don't use that, what do we use?
If we take championships out,
we go game by game.
You don't have to take them out, but you.
If you don't use that, what do you use?
You use everything. They hold everything that they did, everything that you saw them do, everything. But one of these quarterbacks, out of everything,
is better than Tom Brady.
But when you say everything, that means everything in the regular season. So if you got a guy that's carrying a team to playoffs, they have no business being in the playoffs, but he's putting him on his back and carrying him year after 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 year.
Sound like Brady to me. No.
He did not carry them to the playoffs. He did not carry them to the playoffs the first half of the year.
I'm not saying that Brady carried them his whole career. We know he didn't. We know those first three. But
Peyton did.
He played with less on offense.
Okay.
It's a whole other side of the ball. Because it was many times when Peyton Manning walked off the field, he had to give his team the lead and his defense coughed it up.
Should have scored more.
And it was nothing. It was nothing he could do. It was nothing he could do.
You gotta put up points.
Doc, I'm getting tired of your good ass points now. Chill out over there.
Now I'm just look, we're gonna be on this. I gotta shut this down because we're gonna be in this all day. Doc has gonna be late. Hey, but nah, we're coming back to this. Believe this, because we've been having this age old argument for the longest. We're gonna find a structured way to present this. Probably do it like debate style or something. We're gonna do this. We're gonna make this happen. We're gonna make this shit fun, and we're gonna finally get to the bottom of our age-old argument of who's the better quarterback overall, Tom Brady a Peyton Manning or Will Gates?
And we can all agree right now. Tom Brady is just compiling at this point. The seventh Super Bowl doesn't really mean much outside of trying to determine, you know.
But the fact that you can do it, though.
Possible for the dynasty, was it Tom Brady or was it Bill Belichick?
But the fact that you could do it at the age of 43 is amazing.
On a first-year team.
I will say it's impressive because, like, when you look back at the season overall, I mean, he's not like the catalyst, but they not carrying him like Peyton Manning his last Super Bowl. It ain't that.
But he not
the driver either.
He's pulling his weight. Yeah. Now, but because and you know, with this team, we saw this team last year. With Jameis, if Jameis could have cut down on the turnovers, this team would have had a better record. But we see with a quarterback who can manage those things a lot better and get certain things done, and even at the age of 43. But Brady could do that, so that really helped this team. But hey, man, we're coming back to this thing. I like that. I've been waiting on you to come. I've been waiting on that dude to come out saying we finally brought him out. There you go. Good job, Doc. I've been waiting on that. That's what's up. Hey, man, we're coming back next week. They got me hyped in this bitch, man. We're coming back next week. We're going up. We're going to see who's the best team out of 2013 FSU, 2004 USC, 2001 Miami defeated, 2019 LSU to move on to our final round. We're coming back. I am Joseph Ward. He's Doc Love, Sam Dixon, Javard Grant. This is the Fix Sports Podcast. We're all up in y'all chest, man.